2015. What month is?
After New Year, we are meeting first.
First time. In New Year, this is the first class, right? It's been 1 month, I think, we had, right? So, I mean, I've been missing, so hopefully all of you are missing. Okay, so today we'll have auspicious beginning of middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. It's very, very crucial section where, the Prabhupada says, like, first six chapters, Krishna talked about various types of yogas, like, you know, Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Yoga a little bit, but Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Karma Yoga, all these yogas, essentially giving a brief overview of all the different types of yoga. But ultimately, every time Prabhupada emphasizes, as well as Krishna, that ultimately Bhakti Yoga is the best of all. And the culmination was given in the last verse in the sixth chapter, which is, which we memorized, I think, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so many of you didn't write exam. Okay. Yoginam api sarvesha madgate nantaratmana shaddavan bhajate yomam samayitta tamam mataha. Where Krishna says, the best of all the yogis is the one who can, in full consciousness of me, he remembers me all the time. So he declares that Bhakti Yogi is actually the topmost kind of yogi. Okay. So now, middle six chapters is dedicated to Bhakti Yogi, actually. Bhakti Yoga. That's where, you know, all devotees really, really want to hear, you know, how to increase our devotion, you know, how to get this devotion, how to increase our devotion, what really attracts Krishna, and details about Krishna. We talked about so many different types of yoga and how to approach, but, you know, what are the details of spiritual world? What are the details of Krishna's energies? How Krishna creates this material world? What is the nature of this material world? All these details are given in this middle six chapters. So, actually the fortunate thing about Krishna consciousness is that we have all the details about the spiritual world. Like, for example, many of our Maharajas, like especially Ramapad Maharaj, many of the sannyasis are from Christian background. So when they grew up inquisitive about inquiring about spiritual life in their church, like asking, you know, oh, you say, you know, the Father is in heaven, how is the heaven like? So Father is in the heaven, so how is the heaven like? You know, can you give the description? How are the people like? What are the dealings? How does our Father look like? Then they said, you know, these questions we cannot answer, you should not ask. You'll know later, I don't know what they answer. So Maharaj always felt, you know, there is some unknown thing which he wants to know. If there is a kingdom which in the heaven which I need to reach, I need to know the details, how it is like. Whenever we want to go to a certain place, we want to find out so much, right? Where are the exit points, or, you know, where are the trails. Or trek, or, you know, all the picnic spots, where are we? We will find out all those things and then we'll go to the place. We'll not just directly go to the place. So imagine, you know, we invest so many lifetimes to go to spiritual world and we don't know anything about spiritual life or the world there, then it's not so much impetus. We don't feel inspired, right? But when we know details that, you know, Lord's abode is Chintamani Dhamma, where there is Kalpavriksha trees, whatever you ask they give, and it's all auspicious Vaidurya stones, and where every step is a dance, and there is every word is a song, and there is a festival every day. When we hear all this, we feel like, oh, I just want to be in that place, actually, you know. Okay, enough. That will give us impetus to practice our devotional service nicely to go back. So that's the wonderful nature of the Krishna consciousness philosophy, is that we have all the details about spiritual world. So the basic points are given in Bhagavad Gita, and more elaborate details are given in Bhagavatam, which Prabhupada says is a postgraduate study. Bhagavad Gita is called graduate study, undergraduate study, and Bhagavatam is graduate study, and Chaitanya Charitamrita is a postgraduate study. So we have, that's why we also, Srila Prabhupada also did this, many devotees took inspiration because Prabhupada always emphasized systematic study of his books. So we came up with this curriculum of, you know, having these degrees, Bhakti Gita, Bhakti Vaibhav, and Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, and there are Bhakti Purushottama, Bhakti Vedanta, many, many layers. You know, first six cantos are Bhakti Vaibhav, next six cantos are, like, you know, Bhakti Purushottama. So one can systematically study the books, and at the same time, it's like a university, you get a degree like that, you know, devote yourself to study nicely. You know, it's so vast, so many vast details are there, actually. You know, it's not like, you know, I don't know how God is like. We know, right? Everybody, even one person who comes very new to Krishna consciousness, they will know Krishna is like, you know, threefold bended form, he plays flute, and you know, he's in a river, he stands, and all these details we know already, you know, all he wears peacock feather, so many nice things. Okay, so seventh chapter specifically is described or rather is titled as Knowledge of the Absolute. So in this chapter, Krishna, some of the points, you know, connecting points or significant points are that Krishna is now spontaneously starting talking about himself. So far, if you see, it's a dialogue, like Arjuna asks some questions and Krishna answers to them, right? All the time it's like that. But now Krishna is now feeling like, you know, okay, Arjuna, I'm now going to reveal about myself. So this chapter is about where Krishna is talking about his energies, how he, what the material world comprises of, what the spiritual world comprises of, who are the four kinds of people who come to him, who can surrender, who are the people who don't surrender to him, why people worship demigods, why people were taking personalism, all the basic things are given. So, and the other wonderful thing is, like Prabhupada is saying in his lectures, like in this chapter, actually Krishna himself is talking about himself. Like, imagine this God is telling about himself. He's such a, you know, what to say, heavy thing, right? For us, it's maybe, you know, Bhagavad Gita is commonplace for us, you know. It's like yet another book, or maybe, you know, we know it so much, too much actually, that we don't recognize its value. But imagine, God is telling about himself. It's such a, you know, wonderful thing, right? So Prabhupada is saying, if we are fortunate, we'll listen, we'll be receptive, and we'll try to, you know, surrender to the God. So that's what Prabhupada is saying. If you are fortunate, he said. Because many people hear, but many people may not accept. Still, they want to speculate. Because the general approach is, we want to figure out God. Like how we figure out things in materialistic way, right? Oh, I have to figure out what is this, this, you know, problem, software problem. We have to figure out everything. So like that, that's what is called mental speculation. We want to speculate and see, oh, maybe God is like this. Maybe he's in this color, that color. We want to speculate. So Prabhupada clearly says speculation doesn't work. Because it's as if, like, how can we know somebody who is born before us, right? Like, for example, our parents. How can we speculate and find out who our parents are? It's a very nice, you know, analogy, right? How is it possible? Even maybe so-called mother, we can speculate. So because she spends 24 hours with us, we can understand who is our mother. But let's say father, how can we know who is our father? Let's say I'm separate, mother is separated from father. Can the child go on asking everybody, saying, are you my father, are you my father, and speculate and find out? Only when the mother says he is your father, mother is the authentic source of information, then only it's possible. So similarly, Vedas say who is the God. Vedas is like mother and Krishna is God. Vedas can say who is that God. Then the knowledge is revealed. And here Krishna himself is directly revealing that knowledge. So we are very, very eager to hear what Krishna is revealing about himself and see how it increases our impetus to surrender to him. So we'll read this first verse, text number 1. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Maya Sukta Mana Partha Yogam Yunjan Marashaya Asamshayam Samagramma Yatagnyasya Sitachunu. So very, very nice. Actually, I was looking at Srila Prabhupada lectures on this, just in this one verse, the 15 lectures he gave. None of the lecture he repeated the points he gave in other lecture. So of course I couldn't hear all of them, but that shows, like, you know, you could take one point and you go in one direction and talk about, emphasize certain things. So then I felt how important this verse is actually. Very, very sweet terms are used here. You know, my asakta mana. You know, my means to me. Asakta mana means mind attached. Partha, son of Pritha. So, in one of the lecture somewhere I was reading, so Krishna is using this word Partha. Partha is because it's evoking this familial relationship, right? Because Pritha is Krishna's mother. Arjuna's mother, Kunti, is also called Pritha. So, son of Pritha is Partha. So, he's saying, you know, because Kunti is Vasudeva's sister, right? Is Krishna's father. Relating, he's bringing up that familial relationship. No, you're my cousin. It's like that. So he's bringing that affectionate way of addressing Arjuna. And mind attached to me, Okay, we'll leave the translation, then we'll discuss the points. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt." So the connection point is in the last verse, Krishna says, right, Mad gate antaratmana. If you read the, yoginam, a person who is topmost yogi is the one who remember, who thinks of me always within, right? One who with great faith who always abides in me and thinks of me within himself. So Krishna gave a clue that one who thinks of me within himself is the greatest yogi. So in this chapter, Krishna is going to tell how one can think of him all the time. So it's a very important connection point between the verses. So 7th chapter, Krishna is going to reveal his hints how by seeing this world, we can think of Krishna all the time. So we want, just introspect, we also want to always think, right? Okay, how do I remember Krishna all the time? We question we should be asking, because sometimes, many times we forget, right? So when, if we address this chapter in that perspective, then we can get clues. Now, what are the indications Krishna is giving by which we can think of him all the time? So this chapter, Krishna is going to tell Arjuna how one can constantly remember Krishna by seeing the world around us. Also, and also, by cultivating the bhakti. So, son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So, Krishna is saying, by doing this bhakti yoga or being absorbed in Krishna, one can know him in full. So, this word, samagram. Samagram means completely. So, Prabhupada is saying in the lectures that even if you know Brahman or Paramatma, it's not complete knowledge of Krishna. Because Brahman is just sun, it's like sun rays. He's giving, like for example, if we are all bathing in sun rays, hopefully sometime, we get exposed to sun rays. So, can we say by being in touch with sun rays, I know sun? I know, what happens in the sun planet, what's the temperature, who are living there, what dress they wear. What activities they do. Can I guess all those things just by being the sunlight? So like that. So just by experiencing Brahman, we cannot know Krishna, who is the source of Brahman. So similarly, localized realization is Paramatma realization. Just by knowing Paramatma, we cannot know Krishna. So to know Krishna completely is Bhagavan realization. So that's what is this term, in full. Krishna is saying, by doing Bhakti Yoga, you can know me in full, like in Bhagavan realization. You can know me, my person, my form, my name, attributes, my activities, my qualities, everything by doing devotional service. And this word, mind attached, this my asakta mana, very very sweet term I feel. asakta is attachment, asakti, right? We develop this asakti. Mind attached to Krishna. Wow, it's a very very heavy term actually, being mind attached to Krishna. So Prabhupada was telling actually the whole secret is somehow or the other we should get attached to Krishna. Then that's how we develop in bhakti. Then how do we get attached to Krishna? So in some of the points we can share, how do we get attached to Krishna, or how do we increase our attachment to Krishna? Initially everybody starts with Atoshraddha. We start with little faith. Then what happens next? Adhashaddha, Sadhu Sangha, associated devotees, Bhajana Kriya, devotional service. Then Anartha Nivritti. This is a step-by-step process. So how can we analyze our own lives and see how we have increased our attachment to Krishna? What helped in increasing our attachment?
Listening to lectures, association. Yeah.
Hearing. So hearing about Krishna is one of the very, very primary, ways by which we can increase our attachment to Krishna. That's where Srila Prabhupada also emphasizes in the purport as the main way to increase our attachment to Krishna. So can you recollect one of the standard example of person who really became very absorbed and attached to Krishna just by hearing? Who is that? No, somebody else. Parikshit, he was already very very Krishna conscious. He perfected his life. Somebody who really, I'll give you all the hints. Somebody didn't even see Krishna. Just by hearing Rukmini. just by hearing about Krishna from Narada Muni, right? Whom did she hear? Narada Muni? I think so.
Yes.
Okay, mostly. So she became so attached, like she says, I want to marry Krishna. He is the my husband. Imagine nowadays somebody says I want to marry somebody just by hearing. Nobody can believe actually, you know, it works like that. But that was her devotion. She got so absorbed and attached to Krishna's qualities and form and everything that, oh, I just, you know, he's my husband. And she wrote a letter. That Maharaj Radhanath Maharaj was giving the lectures, like many very few verses she spoke in that term, like, you know, where she was saying, writing a letter to Krishna, like, you know, please in come and take me. And she told, you know, this is a way you can kidnap me. Everything she gave details. And she told, you know, if you don't come, I will understand that, you know, it's my destiny. I don't deserve, of course, I am not qualified to marry you. But if you can marry, it's my great fortune. Very, very succinctly she says, but very, very deep message. And in that, Maharaj was saying, actually, Krishna, this is what Krishna does. She is left in this, have you heard this lecture?
No.
So she is put in very, very ambiguous state, or in a state where she doesn't know what is outcome.
Mm.
Initially, she was very anxious because her brother wanted to marry her to Shishupal.
Mm.
Right? She knows, okay, it's going to be a great misery if it happens. So she's anxious. In that anxious state, she wrote. That's one set of anxiety or one level of anxiety. But later on, when she was preparing for marriage, the day of marriage, she's getting out of the home, going to the, you know, the Durga Puja, the outside to get married. And she knows that's the last segment now. After this, that's all finished. It's either way. Either marry Shishupal or Krishna. It's a defining point. Until that point, she didn't know whether Krishna received the letter. Did the Brahman reach Krishna? Did she, you know, get a chance to meet Krishna? Did he read the letter? Did he accept me? Is he going to come? What is his response? Or he felt I'm unqualified. Maybe, okay, then that's fine. I know that option. The thing is, she's ready either way. It's not like he has to marry me, her. No, she's ready either way. But she need to know what choice, what way she should prepare her mind, right? That's what we always feel. Let me know, at least Krishna give some indication. No, I'm okay either way, but tell me what I should do. So then she was, until last minute, she was anxious, you know. She's getting ready. She's, you know, it is described. She's applying all the auspicious decorations on her body for marriage. Everybody is thinking she's marrying Shishupal. Internally, she's thinking, I'm preparing for Krishna. But, oh, is Krishna going to come? So it was very, and then Maharaj was emphasizing that this is what Krishna does. He always wants to bring out that, you know, the anxiety which increases due to love from the devotee, so that it fully matures and purifies the heart. Yeah, so she is the one who is really good example of person who became attached to Krishna because of hearing. And some other things Prabhu was saying, association. And especially I was thinking, you know, when I was reading this Yamuna Mataji's book, like that, I feel like if we hear and associate with people who are very advanced, who are very attached to Krishna, it will increase our attachment to Krishna. Or at least we know how to develop that attachment. Especially if we hear, you know, Arivilas Prabhu or Srila Prabhupada, how they spontaneously they could do their life in service to Krishna. We feel they have so much attachment to Krishna. So if we serve them, so the best way to get the qualities of somebody is to serve them. Serving them is either hearing from them is the best service to anybody, actually. Hearing from them, hearing their realizations, that's the best way to serve them. So when we serve, automatically mercy flows from their heart, actually. And not only serving, if we pray to this great Vaishnavas, you know, please, I'm so fallen, you know, give me your mercy. You have all these qualities, just give me one drop of qualities, then our attachment to Krishna can increase. Then some of the things is Queen Kunti, prayers. Praying is also one of the good things. Queen Kunti also prays that, you know, let my mind be attached to you as a Ganges water. Who knows this verse? I don't know. Anybody memorize Kunti prayers? As a Ganges forever flows without hindrance, let my mind always be attached to you, Krishna. He's saying. And she says, let calamities come again and again. Actually, when we are discussing this, this comes in first canto. So we discussed during Bhakti Vaibhav. Our teacher is studying. We are not qualified, so let's not pray like that. You know, she is saying, let calamities come again and again. Why? Do you know why? Yeah, she says, because when dealing with them, I will never lose sight of you, or I will always remember you. And remembering you means getting rid of cycle of birth and death. So let it come in again and again. So Prabhu was telling, you know, anyway, for us calamities are going to come. We don't need to pray. At least we need to pray in that situation, let me remember you. So, no, but she is very, very elevated. Many of the Vaishnava Acharyas really relish her prayers. No, praying is also one more thing. And some more points, one more thing. At least we all started like that. First, where is our shelter? Where do we get most of our nourishment from? Spiritual strength.
Prasadam?
No.
No, it all started from
temple. Temple is a way, Archana, in special Prabhupada says, neophytes, they should start with temple worship. When we see the deity in the temple, when we see the Archana process going on, and the way Krishna is Krishna and Radharani are decorated beautifully, automatically mind get attached. We feel, why not once a week, let me come every day. Right? Like that. So that's how we can increase our attachment. Okay, then, this we are talking about mind attached to me, right? Then another term used is Madashraya. Madashraya translation, whatever translation says, in consciousness of me, on Krishna consciousness. Also another term is taking full shelter of Krishna. Ashraya is shelter, right? Madashraya means shelter of Krishna. So Prabhupada says in the lectures, Madashraya means taking shelter of Krishna, or because we don't have access to Krishna directly, taking shelter of Krishna's representative. Like for us, taking shelter of Krishna's representative. Or it means following the process of Bhakti Yoga under the bona fide direction of a spiritual master. That's what it means. Then Asamshayam, without a doubt. Samagram Maam means know me fully. Yata Gnyasyasi. What is Gnyasyasi?
Knowing.
You can know me. Tat Shrunu. So this word is another also term. It's very, very important. Krishna, what is Tat Shrunu means? Now try to hear. Tat Shrunu means now. Shrunu means hear.
Oh, yeah.
Tat means that. No. Hear that. Hear now. I'm going to tell hear that. So if you notice the translation, first term is now. It starts with now here. Okay, now here. So that when we first it starts with hearing. So Krishna is telling, okay, just Arjuna, just hear. I'm going to tell you how by following Bhakti Yoga you can know me in full without a doubt. Okay. We didn't even go to the Okay, so we'll read some sections of purport. Here Prabhupada emphasizes on hearing as a primary process to connect with Krishna. We'll read the first paragraph and then third paragraph. In this seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita.
In this seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter.
Mm. We can skip to the third paragraph.
One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, Tat Shrunu, or hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him one receives the greatest opportunity for progress in Krishna consciousness. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart puffed up with academic education.
Mm. So basically, you know, the concept of hearing is when we hear from somebody, the consciousness of the person who is speaking affects us. That's what is happening actually. No, consciousness affects us, and also, you know, the bhakti they have, that's where the drops of bhakti come into our heart. So that's why it's very, very important whom we hear from, especially spiritual subject matters. Of course, material subject matters we have to hear from professors and all those people, but especially, you know, something related to very close to our heart and very, very, very precious. Right? You know, because one spiritual life is disturbed, then, you know, it's a loss forever. So we should be very careful whom we should hear from. So Prabhupada is saying we should hear from Krishna directly or from a pure devotee of Krishna, you know, spiritual master, bona fide, but not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education. So somebody may understand Bhagavad Gita just by the dint of their English or dictionary and all those things. and they can start giving discourses. So, but then if he doesn't have devotion, he will not be able to understand it. So we can also not hear from him. So I was thinking related to this is recently Navya and Praveen Prabhu's cousin came here. So he stayed here 1 week. It seems he has been chanting one round from home also, because his mother and everybody were like practicing, taking up. Suddenly he figured out that they are writing the exam, 6th chapter exam. So they were discussing and he said, you know, okay, let me read and write exam. In one day he decided. So I didn't, whether he's opened Bhagavad Gita earlier, this is the first time he's touched Bhagavad Gita.
Before also.
Okay. So he started reading Bhagavad Gita in few hours, he read 30 verses. Then I was knowing what's happening, so one earlier day I had to go to their home anyway. So then I met him, I thought, okay, let me start up some discussion. So I said, okay, let me ask you what you understand. I just wanted to check, somebody who didn't have a background of devotion, if he just read English part, I know for sure, no, they will not be able to understand usually. No, because our conceptions will be laid down, unless we hear properly, it's difficult. So I asked few questions, I was very amazed actually, the way he could understand everything. Then it's at least, you know, bona fide, whatever understanding we could get from Prabhupada, we got that one. That's very good. After some time, I asked some questions in the rest of the second 6th chapter, which he didn't read. Then he was saying, oh, I think maybe Krishna would have said like this, or maybe Arjuna would have said like this, he was telling. Then I was like, oh, I clearly told, you know, we should not use these words. I think maybe he doesn't know, so I just clarified it. But then I understood, you know, okay, to some extent he received it. But that tendency, you know, use my intelligence to speculate, to figure out what God would have said, what, no, as if like, you know, I can map out, right, maybe this, oh, I can guess, oh, this is what is going to happen. It's like that. No, that is easy to apply that. Usually we may, I don't know, it's very difficult. If you have that tendency, it's very difficult to receive the subject matter, because we have to be really in a submissive mood to receive. Saying, no, I don't know, let me hear. But if you start thinking maybe this, maybe that, then gone case. Okay, we'll continue. So this are the rest of the verses. Remember, I once pointed out the section in Bhagavatam where it emphasizes how beginning with hearing one can reach the stage of realizing Krishna in truth. Right? These verses we pointed out, right? It's 1.2.17-21. So that's where again Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing here, quoting here. So we'll just read the... Should we read the translation? Or it's okay, you can read it on your own. So this section of Bhagavatam talks about how beginning with hearing, once immediately, it slowly starts, you know, when Krishna reciprocates from within and he cleanses the dirt, and then slowly the devotee rises above the modes of passion and ignorance, which gets situated in goodness, and then lust, avarice, greed, all the material impurities goes away, and slowly if he becomes fixed in devotion, nishtha, and then he develops attachment for Krishna, and then slowly he'll realize Krishna in full truth. It's all just within these 4 verses, so much progress is happening, starting with hearing till complete realization of Krishna. So the point there is how by hearing one can realize Krishna in full. That's what Krishna is telling, right? So these verses say the same thing. So that's why Prabhupada is quoting this. So now let's read the last 2 lines. I'll read that. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness, one can understand the science of Krishna. So it's very clear, right? Only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand signs of Krishna. Why only devotees can tell about Krishna properly?
Because they hear from bona fide authorities.
Otherwise, mm. Otherwise, they cannot. Mm. Also, some other reason? One verse Krishna says, why he declares his knowledge to Arjuna? Because? Because he is a devotee and friend. So 4th chapter Krishna says, Arjuna, because 4.3, Arjuna, because you are my devotee and friend, I am giving you this knowledge. So only devotees can receive this knowledge. Why devotees can receive? Because they are non-envious, right? By at least we are trying to be non-envious of Krishna. Of course we know as gradually when we see so many things come up, but at least, you know, we are trying to be, or rather we are ready to accept Krishna as supreme. That itself is a big step, right? So we are trying to be non-envious. That's why we are able to receive the greatness of Krishna. Just imagine, let's say, you know, we can day to day we face this thing, right? Sometimes at least some called so-called glories we may have. Let's say, you know, I passed this exam in number one rank, or so many things we might have achieved, right? Or let's say I got some, you know, project work top number one, or I got good score at my yearly annual review or whatever. So many, some glories we might have achieved. So among the friends we have, or so-called friends or people who deal with, whom do we share that confidential information? Do we find somebody who we know they are envious and who they will backstab us and who will try to, you know, exploit us or try to pull us down? Or do we share with somebody who is very friend and who will bless us or will help us increase our enthusiasm? Right? Obviously, we'll share with people who are non-envious. So similarly, Krishna also is going to share this knowledge only to people who are non-envious, who will favorably react to this. Otherwise, envious people will become more envious to Krishna, right? So instead of not disturbing them, that's why Krishna also Krishna says, devotees, don't agitate people who are ignorant, right? Don't disturb them. Let them continue doing their work and slowly engage them by prasadam and activities, right? We should also not disturb them.
One of the offenses. We should not give a holy name to the...
Yeah, one of the, I think, 7th or 8th. Yeah.
Ninth
offense. Yeah, so same thing. So that's why, you know, Krishna is giving now this knowledge to Arjuna. And so to some extent or the other, we are also very fortunate that we are able to... So the extent we are a non-envious, to that extent we can... Krishna reveals himself actually. So we may theoretically know a little bit, or we may say, I am such and such devotee. But as we progress towards non-enviousness, we will get to know more and more about Krishna's glories. Okay, text number 2 then. We'll continue. Jnanam teham savijnanam idam vakshyami asheshata yajnyatva neha bhuyo nyaj jnatavyam avashishyate. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. Wow. So what Krishna is saying is, now, okay, this is a summary of what he is going to tell. I am now going to give you knowledge in full. Basically, you know, after this, there is nothing else for you to know. About what? Both phenomenal. Phenomenal means material world. And material, you can write down actually, I don't see anybody taking notes. Phenomenal means material. And numinous means spiritual. So he's going to give information about the material world as well as Krishna's spiritual energies. After which, knowing which, there is nothing else for us to be known. That means it's a complete knowledge. Just imagine. After knowing this, there's nothing else to be known. Everything, so everything within the purview is fits into this. Either material or spiritual. And Krishna is going to declare how these material things are going to come and how spiritual things are going to come. So we'll read first few lines.
Is he talking about the rest of the chapter? Or
yes, he's talking about few verses actually. In few verses is going to do it, and after that some other... hopefully the section we'll cover today will cover it.
Madhi, is the Raja Vidya, right?
That is 9th chapter, confidential knowledge. No, this is... he talks about this. We'll come to the next verse. Let's read first 6 lines or 7-8 lines.
Complete knowledge includes the knowledge of phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and the source of the both of them. This is transcendental knowledge. The Lord wants to explain the above mentioned system of knowledge because Arjuna is the Krishna's confidential devotee and friend. In the beginning of the 4th chapter, this explanation was given by the Lord, and it was again confirmed here. Complete knowledge can be achieved only by the devotee of the Lord in disciplic succession directly from the Lord.
We can pause there. So same thing, right? We got this point. Main thing is Krishna is going to talk about material world as well as spiritual world, and only Arjuna is chosen because he is his devotee and friend. And Prabhupada is saying we can receive this knowledge only through disciplic succession. So you can write next to that if you want. The terms, then Prabhupada in 4th chapter Krishna is saying, right? That you can write 4.3, my devotee and friend. Okay, so we'll continue to the next verse. The connection is... next verse says, who is qualified to receive this knowledge now? So Krishna is saying, I'm going to give this knowledge, right? So next verse says, how rare it is to know this knowledge, and who can know this? Text number 3. Manushyanam sahasteshu kashchit yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kashchit vedi tatvata. It's one of the sweet verses. Out of many, many that makes sense. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So essentially, you know, out of many thousands of among men, so there are many, first of all, human birth is very rare. Is among that, already Krishna is picking people of the category of human being by saying men, right? In this room, there are so many living entities, right? Bacteria, insects, so many of them. But there are only few, you can count like maybe 15, 20 humans, right? Out of so many living entities, men are few. Out of them, there are only, out of many of those men, one may endeavor for perfection. So how many people really are seeking for spiritual life? So there are very few. Among them are, you know, different spirit, like, you know, jnani yogis and dhyani yogis. So different, these are all also aspiring transcendental goals. So to some extent, they are actually transcendentalists. They are also trying to achieve perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, so among them also, okay, somebody may have achieved topmost of dhyana yoga, so many stages, right? Topmost of those. Among them, hardly one knows me in truth. Among those people who have achieved, endeavored is also less. Within that, somebody only achieves perfection. Within that, persons who knows Krishna is very, very rare, you see. So this knowledge which I am giving to you is not to be understood by each and everyone. He is saying, you know, it's very, very confidential knowledge. Only my devotees can understand.
Only one knows me in truth. Does that mean that one knows me completely or?
In truth means in full, yes.
In full, okay.
Yeah. In truth means really, really as he is. Like somebody may know some aspect of like Brahman or Paramatma like that, but really me or Krishna is only few. Bhaktas only know. So these are some of the verses in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, what's the way to know him? 11.54 and 18.55. I can read the translation. Very sweet verses. Bhaktiyamama Bijanati verse. 11.54, Krishna says, Bhaktiyatva Ananya Shakya Aham Evo Vidha Arjuna Jnatvam Darshanam Cha Tatvena Praveshtamta Cha Parantapa. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So Krishna very clearly says, only by undivided devotional service. Very clear. And same thing, 11.54 is done.
Oh, you said 11.55.
Sorry, 18.55. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavanyashchashmi tatvataha tato mam tatvato jnatva vishate tadanantaram. One can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Very clear, right? So how can we know Krishna, right? It's undivided devotional service. So because Krishna is telling it's very rare, so in order to fit that bill, we should develop this undivided, unmotivated devotional service. Okay, so we'll read third paragraph. It is not possible for a Brahman realized impersonalist.
It is not possible for the Brahman realized impersonalist or the Paramatma realized yogi to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the son of Mother Yashoda or the charioteer of Arjuna. Even the great demigods are sometimes confused about Krishna. Mamtu Vedana Kaschana. No one knows me as I am, the Lord says. And if one does not if one does know him, then sa mahatma sa durlabha, such a soul is very rare. Therefore, unless one practices devotion service to the Lord, one cannot know Krishna as he is, tatvata. Even though one is a great scholar or philosopher, only the pure devotees can know something out of the inconceivable transcendental qualities in Krishna, his being the cause of all causes, his omnipotence and opulence, and has wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge and renunciation, because Krishna is benevolently inclined to his devotees. He is the last word in the Brahman realization, and the devotees alone can realize him as he is. Therefore it is said, Atas Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahyam Indriya Semon Mukehi Jivvadav Swayam Eva Suratyattaha. No one can understand Krishna as he is by the blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto him. Bhakti Samrita.
So some of the points here, let's refresh that. So what first section? Krishna Prabhupada is saying that even the Brahman realized impersonalist, Paramatma realized yogi, it's this partial understanding of Krishna. So they cannot understand Krishna as how he can act as son of Mother Yashoda. Now how he can be a charioteer of Arjuna. So this one of the prayers in Queen Kunti also said, actually, you know, it's very bewildering. People get so bewildered looking at your activities. That very one verse, I could have quoted the reference. Okay, it's 1.8.31, if you want to know. Note down. In that verse, 1.8.31, Kunti Devi is saying, even fear personified is afraid of you. Fear personified is like Yamaraja, death. Like, you know, all. Even fear personified is afraid of you. But it's very bewildering to see that you are afraid of when Mother Yashoda is running behind you with a stick and you are crying tears. This sight of you is bewildering to me, she says. No, just imagine, absolute truth, controller of everything. No, he's afraid of something. How do we understand it, right? So, of course, devotees to some extent understand it. But just imagine if he has to do with calculation, speculation, everything, if you have to come to understanding, who will understand it? And then she further says in the prayers, like, people are guessing why you are born. Some say you are born because, you know, you like Yadufa dynasty. Some say you are born because you want to rejuvenate the devotion service. Some say you are born because you have to kill your miscreant. So many reasons people give, but nobody knows why you are born. Like that, you know, even birth is very mysterious for Krishna. That's why he says, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. One who knows the transcendental nature of my birth and appearances, activities, can, at the moment of death, can go back to kingdom of Godhead. Because it's everything is mysterious. That's why Krishna says, only by undivided devotional service, you can enter into the mysteries of my understanding. Right? That verse we read. Bhakti Advananya Shakya. So then, this statement is there. Even the great demigods are sometimes confused. So can anybody recollect some of the demigods who got confused? Some examples which relate to Brahma. Yeah. Brahma Vimohan Leela, where Brahma, you can summarize. Little bit, not the whole past. Like, you know, yeah. Brahma got thought Krishna as ordinary cohort boy.
Cohort boy, and came and took all the
cows.
Cohort friends, and to put him into the sweep. When immediate comeback, he sees that all friends came back and playing with him. But later he realized it is not the actual boys, they are in expansion
of Krishna. Yeah. So even Brahma got bewildered and did all this. And then some Indra, Mataji, how Indra?
Govardhan.
Yeah. So Indra thought, you know, how can this small boy, this naughty boy, he just talk some childish thing and he could convince his parents to not do the yajna which I get it for every year. No, how can he do that? He thought like that and he wanted to take revenge and he got it back. So then somewhere else. I think these are ones mainly from the Krishna's pastimes, right? Otherwise, even for example, as a Mohini Murti, right? Yes. Somebody was running behind her, right? Brahma or Shiva?
Shiva.
Shiva got so enchanted. Actually, Shiva said, I want to see your form as Mohini Murti. Krishna says, you know, you don't want to see. So, no, I want to see. So then he appeared so beautiful and Parvati scolded him like anything. No, I'm here and you're running behind somebody else. It's like that. So all the great demigods are bewildered. Even demigods, so just imagine, demigods also cannot really understand Krishna in truth. So that's why demigods, have you come up about this? Have you heard this? Even demigods, they pray to be born in Kali Yuga, to take birth in the earth planet so that they can practice Sankirtan movement and perfect their life and go to Goloka. So that's a privilege we have. Either we are all fallen demigods or some fortunate souls.
I think Advaita is in combination of
Shiva and
Brahma.
Shiva and Brahma, two personalities, yeah. I think.
Who?
Advaita Acharya.
Yeah.
So that's why Krishna is saying such a great soul is very rare. Who, you know, that's why even in bhakti, Prabhupada says, right, in a war there definitely are casualties. Like somebody may say, oh, everybody is such a precious process, everybody is taking up seriously. Why some people go away after some time? So we are in war against Maya, so definitely there will be casualties. Casualties mean death. Death means people fall away like that. So imagine if the goal is so precious and Krishna is going to give only to few people, how many of us can reach that goal? So we should constantly ask ourselves, or when we see somebody who is slowly approaching that goal, we should ask them, what's the secret? Okay, initially we start with some motive or some enthusiasm, something. But how do we do it year after year for 50 years? Or maybe, you know, right? What's the secret? So we should ask, definitely, you know. That's why when we read some biographies, we'll get a clue. It's a very intense desire. This actually in Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Instruction, only one price to get that bhakti, the topmost bhakti. What is that price?
Enthusiasm, desire, hope, desire.
Laulyam, laulyam api moolyam. Laulyam means intense greed to have it. That's the only price. One has to have intense greed. No, this is the only thing I want to have in my life. So when the greed increases, automatically our intensity towards other things decreases. Then we just keep focusing on it, and how much ever we invest in it, we feel it's not enough. We feel, oh, still I have this, still I have this, still I have this, still. So we keep increasing our momentum. Then, you know, that greed one, yeah, we has to have. And always we feel, no, I don't have enough greed again. Because everything we can improve. So we just have to have that greed that I have to go back to Krishna. Yeah, so then why only devotees can know about Krishna? Because Krishna himself reveals. This is not something speculative, right? It's not like, okay, I read some books and figure out who is Krishna, right? This knowledge has to be revealed to us. So because Krishna is very benevolently disposed towards his devotees, Krishna reveals, okay, I want you to know about me. Because it's very pleasing to your heart. Like, we will be so happy to know about Krishna, right? I want to know how Krishna creates this material world. I want to know how Krishna, you know, plays with his friends. We are very enchanted to hear that. So Krishna reveals that to his devotee. And this last phrase, verse is also very important, where Prabhupada is saying, it's often quoted whenever we have to say that how with this material senses we cannot approach Krishna, who is completely transcendental. So what's the way then? The way is to purify the senses by applying it in devotional service. No one can understand Krishna as he is by blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service. So by using this material senses, if we serve Krishna, that becomes bhakti, transcendental loving service. By being pleased with that service, Krishna reveals himself to us. This is a very nice verse, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Okay, so we'll continue with the next verse. I wanted to do some more verses. Okay. So, okay, text number 4. Now Krishna is 4 to 12 actually, this section. Oh, I forgot to mention the sections. Okay, maybe we'll do next class. 4 to 12, then Krishna is going to talk about how he is the... Krishna is the source of everything, and we can see Krishna everywhere. How Krishna is the source of everything, and now we can see Krishna everywhere from the things which we see in the material world. So text number 4, he talks about the whole material creation in one verse. Everything about material world summarized in one verse. If you know this, we know everything about material world. Text number 4. Bhumir apo analovayo kam mano buddhi revacha ahankara idiyam me binna prakriti rashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. Altogether, these 8 constitute my separated material energies. So material world is made of all these energies, and Krishna is saying these are all his energies. Mine, binna prakriti, me, it's mine, right? My eightfold, separated also, you know, it's not directly connected to Krishna. Separated material energies. This whole material world is made of these 8. So we'll read the last paragraph. In the material energy, the principal manifestations.
In the material energy, the principal manifestations are 8, as above mentioned.
out of these, the first five manifestations, namely earth, water, fire, air and sky, are called the five gigantic creations or gross creations, within which the five sense objects are included. They are the manifestations of physical sound, touch, form, taste and smell. Material science comprises these 10 items and nothing more. But the other three items, namely mind, intelligence and false ego, are neglected by materialists. Philosophers who deal with mental activities are also not perfect in knowledge because they do not know the ultimate source, Krishna. The false ego, I am, and it is mine, which constitute the basic principle of material existence, includes 10 sense organs, material activities.
For material activities.
Organs for material activities. Intelligence refers to the total material creation called Mahat-tattva.
We can pause there. So actually in this phrase, Prabhupada is paraphrasing the different elements constituting this material nature. There are total 24 elements. So I'll give the list so it's easy for you to follow. So first five elements are given, this gross elements. You can write down, somebody can write down very nicely. The earth, water, fire, air and sky, right? These are constitute the five gross material elements, right?
With the sky here, we call ether, right?
Ether. Ether or sky, they are referring.
Ether is space. Not space, right?
Yeah.
There is no sky.
Ether is not sky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes it's used interchangeably. Mm. So, earth, water, air, fire and ether, right?
Yeah.
So, these are five gross elements. So, within this, there are five sense objects. So, like it starts from bottom. Like ether has sound. So, basically there is sound in the space. Sound travels through space, right? Then when it comes to air, there is a touch as well as sound. You can feel the touch of the air, right? You can also feel sound also travels through air. Then fire. Next is fire. So, form is there in fire. Of course, you know, the lower levels are also there. For example, air has touch as sound. Fire has form, touch and sound. So fire, you can form, you can see it, you can touch it, and there is sound also. And water has taste, form, touch and sound. So it includes the lower levels as well as it has a unique thing, which is taste. Water, you can taste it. Earth has smell, taste, form, touch and sound. So that's why these five sense objects are included in these five gross elements. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, you may be asked for this 24 elements, so I am giving the list. Then other thing is, so we got 10 so far, right? Then other three are mind, intelligence and false ego. So 13.
How 24 are
they?
That's what I am telling
you.
Not there yet.
Oh, yeah, not there yet.
So we got 13, right?
Mm.
So then, mind, intelligence, false ego, 13. Then 10 more are the senses, so which are generated from false ego, which are 5 knowledge acquiring senses and 5 working senses. So we have these senses, right? Knowledge acquiring senses are, this list I always mess up, it's there given in 13.7 purport. So you can write down. So the knowledge acquiring senses are eyes, ears, nose, tongue, nose, tongue and skin. So through which eyes we can acquire, you know, what are the objects,
knowledge.
We acquire the knowledge about the world through ears, nose, smell, right, tongue and skin. And 5 working senses. Working senses are voice, legs, hands, anus and genitals.
Voice
means like
What are the working senses?
5 working senses are voice or mouth, maybe they say. Legs, hands, anus and genitals. They work, right? Legs move, hands move. Okay. So we, how much we got? How many we got?
23. Yeah.
So last element is that Mahat-tattva. Mahat-tattva is the whole material elements together conglomerate. The total everything together is called Mahat-tattva. That's how the creation starts. Everything together, it starts. initially it's called Pradhan, where it's all unmanifested, and when Krishna, Vishnu glances, it becomes divided into Mahatattva, and then all these things, working senses, everything develops. So anyway, these are details. Will come in Bhagavatam, but you can just write down the 24th element is Mahatattva. So that's the last line. Intelligence refers to the total material creation called the Mahatattva. So you got this 24 elements. So the whole material world is divided as this. So that's what it is. Okay? Okay, so we'll not repeat it again.
Mahatattva, what is sound, touch, form, taste, and what is the
smell.
Okay? So text now, we have 5 minutes.
What is the difference between these five senses within within the air, earth, water, fire, those five senses like sound,
sense objects,
odor, sense. What is the difference between these sense objects and our working knowledge acquiring senses, eyes?
So with knowledge acquiring senses, we perceive the sense objects. So eyes see, so form. Right? Nose smells that sense. So we gratify the sense objects through our senses. Okay, so we'll continue. We'll hopefully. We just have few one full paragraph to read here. Okay, we'll cover the next verse also. Tiksna, now Krishna is talking about his spiritual energy. Text number 5. Apareyam itasva anyam prakritim viddhi me param jiva bhutam mahabaho yedam tarite jagat. Besides these, O mighty Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. So he is talking about us now. So besides this material elements, there is another superior energy. So we are all superior energy, right? Spiritual energy, which consists of living entities. What are they doing? They are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. So Krishna summarized our life, our existence, our purpose of life, everything. We are just here to exploit the material nature. We'll just read few lines. First few lines.
Here it is clearly mentioned that living entities belong to the superior nature or energy of the Supreme Lord. The inferior energy is matter manifested in different elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. Both forms of a material nature, namely gross, earth, etc. and subtle, mind, etc. are products of the inferior energy. The living entities who are exploiting these inferior energies for different purposes are the superior energy of the Supreme Lord. And it is due to this energy that the entire material world functions.
Yeah, we can pause there. So again, it's the same thing paraphrased, right? It's clearly saying the gross as well as subtle elements which we discussed earlier, they're all product of material energy which is inferior. And living entities are made of the superior energy. But still, because we are tiny, right? That's why we can be overcome by material energy. Krishna is declaring material energy to be inferior. And he is saying all of us are superior. But all of us get influenced by Maya, which is material energy. Why? Because we are so, individually we are so tiny. Got it?
Mm.
Even though it's inferior, it's so vast or so powerful that individually we cannot overcome it. That's why Krishna says, you surrender to me, then I dictate my material energy to not bother you. Because we go to the boss. The immediate boss is bothering, we'll go to the boss's boss, right? So that's what it is. We go to Krishna, we surrender to Krishna. Krishna says, okay, Maya, don't disturb this soul. No, okay, he's my confidant. No, I trust him, he's going to come to me. Okay, let's read the last paragraph. The Supreme Lord Krishna is the only controller.
The Supreme Lord Krishna is the only controller and all living entities are controlled by him. These living entities are his superior energy because the quality of their existence is one and the same with the Supreme, but they are never equal to the Lord in quantity of power. While exploiting the gross and subtle inferior energy, the Supreme energy forgets his real spiritual mind and intelligence. This forgetfulness is due to the influence of matter upon the living entity. But when the living entity becomes free from the influence of the illusory material energy, he attains the stage called mukti or liberation. The false ego, under the influence of material illusion, thinks I am matter and material acquisitions are mine. His actual position is realized when he is liberated from all material ideas
including the conception of his becoming one in all respects with God. Therefore, one may conclude that the Gita confirms the living entity to be only one of the multi-energies of Krishna. And when this energy is freed from material contamination, it becomes fully Krishna conscious.
Or liberated. So essentially the essence is that to start with, we are spiritual energy. Just because we are covered with matter, we become contaminated and get this false ego and we think we are this body and all those things. So the whole effort is now to how to uncover it. That's all. How to uncover it so we regain our original nature, where we realize that we are servant of Krishna and we feel we are liberated and fully Krishna conscious at that stage. That's all. We just have to undo now everything. Whatever we got covered so many lifetimes, we just have to undo it and come back to that original pure state. Then we'll become like fire. We can go merge with the fire. No, like Krishna. We can become pure like Krishna and we can go back to him. That's what is it. That's why Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is innate. It's not we are artificially imposing on ourselves. It's everybody's heart is for Krishna always. But just that everybody's covered. Then we just have to undo that uncovering and then we'll realize our true nature, that which is we are servant of Krishna. So any questions or comments? So far, I think we should stop here. I wanted to cover one more verse, but we can do later. Yeah. Any questions or comments or discussion so far? When did you come from India?
Last week.
Still jet lag? Yeah. It's very nice, right, to hear about Krishna from Krishna, about us. And yeah, in one lecture, Radhanath Maharaj was telling, which is that, I think about Jarasandha lecture or something he was telling, that when Muchakunda was sleeping in the cave, right, and who is that demon? Kalyavana?
Kalyavana.
Yeah, Kalyavana is attacking Krishna, or rather he's running behind Krishna, and Krishna was just walking. And he could, Kalyavana was running as fast as he can, but he couldn't reach Krishna. He was just, and Maharaj was telling, it was insulting to Kalyavana. I'm so powerful. Krishna is not even running from me. Like, you know, he's a great insult. And he's not even taking a weapon to fight with me. So he's very furious. Now, how could he do the ego is like smashed. False ego. He's so furious, he's running very vigorously. And Krishna had multiple purposes to achieve. He wanted to wake up Muchakunda also, because he's sleeping after, that's another story. So he's sleeping, he's his devotee, he wanted to wake him up, and also he wanted to finish Kalyavana. So he, Muchakunda has a boon, whoever wakes him up, they will be fired,
ash.
No, they will be killed,
become ash.
They will become ash. So then Krishna goes inside and he hides somewhere, it's all dark in the cave, it's in the, Muchakunda is sleeping in a cave, he hides inside. And Kalyavana enters and he sees somebody sleeping and he says, oh, how dare Krishna is sleeping, you know? He's not even walking, he's sleeping. Then he just gives him a kick and that's all. Muchakunda wakes up and he looks at him and with the fire element within his body increases and Kalyavana becomes ashes. Then what I was trying to tell, Maharaj was telling, actually at that point in the cave, Krishna knew 5,000 years later, we in this Chaupati temple, we are going to discuss about this pastime. He knows everything what you are thinking now. All of us, what we are thinking now, Krishna knows 5,000 years back at that time. He was telling that, that I felt very mysterious. You know how Krishna is so knowledgeable actually. He knows everything, so much. All of us, you know, what we are thinking, our past and what about future, what choices we are going to make. Without again interfering our independence. See, that's what is the question people say, no? When we say we have free will, how, and there is destiny, how can we have free will when there is destiny?
Yeah.
You see, that's a very fantastic question people ask usually. So, no, Krishna knows everything.
Mother, in this context, I have a doubt, but I don't know. Is it? So, Krishna knows what we do in future, right?
Mm.
So, is it means that What I'm going to choose, he knows.
Yeah.
If I choose A, then result is B. So he knows the logic of that one. Or
I'm going to get a B only directly. That means my destiny is B. He knows, or he knows the logic that if I choose A,
he knows
I
all
get
of
B.
Them. He knows that if you choose A, like, you know, because that's how material nature works, right?
Yeah.
You give input, this output will come. That material nature defines. So
he
knows how it works. He knows that also.
Yeah.
And he knows among A, B, we are going to choose A.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows because of A, we are going to get that result also, because he knows the logic.
Yeah. Why am I asking, if he knows that we are going to choose A, that means, it's of course, materialistic people ask the way that if Krishna knows terrorist killing the people, why don't Krishna stopping terrorists to kill?
No, because he will not interfere with free will. That's the whole thing.
Okay.
He will not. He gives a small, tiny free will to all of us,
mm-hmm.
and within that, something maybe she's trying to. Within that, we have to make choices. So he will not. He gives intelligence, you know, which is good, which is bad, what are the consequences, everything, and he leaves up to us. Like anything, right? We give a knife, we know how to use best use of knife. We know how to harmful. All knowledge are given to us. So if we want to cut ourselves purposefully, who will stop us? Right? So that's what it is. So Krishna is not the root cause for the bad which is happening in the world, but he created the system and we are misusing it. That's the problem. So, Soumya, you want to say something?
To the same question that Prabhuji just asked, you know, it's very difficult to. I mean, if Krishna already knows what choices we are going to make, and if Krishna already knows what is the outcome of those choices, where is the free will?
No, his knowing doesn't affect our choice, right? Because he is not imposing. He being the all-knower, he knows it. We can hide from him. Or rather, it's as if like, or I don't know, I'm trying to give an analogy. It's as if like, for example, a mother is carrying a child. Somehow she is aware of the child's movements within.
Well, if we offer something to a child, mother knows what is going to do with that. If you do offer.
Yeah. So, that's what I'm saying. So, as a father, or rather as a God, Krishna knows exactly. Just imagine the magnanimity of his consciousness, right? He knows so many living entities, so many destinies, so much, everything is aware of, right? But still, because of his knowing, doesn't take away our free will. Because at any moment we can think, right? Every moment actually we are making choices. Nobody is imposing it on us, right? Now the moment we get out of the class, we have plenty of choices to make, right? Whether we want to go out and eat in restaurant, we want to watch a TV, we want to, you know, talk with friends, so many options. So how can we say we don't have free will? Because you are making a choice to choose a particular. Even your husband doesn't know what you're going to do. Right? So that means it's your free will then. So the thing is, Krishna knowing what you're going to choose is not going to be forced on you, what you're going to choose. Because we also sometimes don't know what we are going to choose, right? Yeah. So, that's the thing. Hare Krishna, Amit Prabhu.
Yes, Mother, I think I was just trying to think in the same analogy with that kid.
Huh.
First kid is my favorite analogy. Sometimes parents know what their kid going to choose, but still parents allow them, okay, let go and choose that.
Yeah.
Parents already know what is the positive and negative of both the choices that kid can make.
That's
but
true.
Still parents know that my kid choose this one.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes, I am now able to relate. Prabhu eats the jalapeno when he eats, and our kids usually are around when we are eating and they want to see what we are eating and they want to taste. I always say, you know, hide it unnecessarily, especially after kids eat the meal. I don't want to give unnecessarily, they will vomit and it's a big mess. We have to feed again and gets delayed everything. So then I tell him, no, you hide it. Because anyway, now they don't have a knowledge what is good, what is not good. Even if it tells, sometimes they are adamant, they don't listen. So just hide it, just not give them. But in that cases, he will allow. But in some cases, he says they are so particular, they want to touch it. Let them touch it, they will feel the pain, it's going to burn. Because we are telling it's going to burn, they are not listening. So let them feel it once, then next time they are going to not touch it. They say, you know, twice burn, once burn, twice shy. So like for example, cooker I put and they want to play with the cooker, we keep it in the middle. So they know it's hot, so they want to play around, we touch with the spoon, the you know, the steam comes out, they play around like that. So, my, of course, Prabhu is always scared of me, cage they're playing. But these are not examples to follow. But yeah, so then, but first one day, they touch. After that, Maharati is special, very careful. And Narasimha is intelligent, he'll put some spoon or something to remove the steam out of it, but he'll not touch. So, they got this, at least they're learning, right? Instead of always holding them back, don't touch it and all those things. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Yeah, thank you,
Father. Hare Krishna, we are not getting our calling bell yet. So maybe they are waiting for us.
But Mataji, if this is also true, like without Krishna's permission, even the blade of grass can't move. How come this two, like how we can, even if the blade of grass can't move, then how can we wish our own wish?
So the thing is, so what that means, even without Krishna's permission, not even blade of grass moves, means basically everything is Krishna's energy, is acting under his direction. It's nothing is independent. That's how we can say Krishna knows everything also, right? How Krishna knows everything? It's all his energy. He is conscious, like to some extent we know what our hand is doing, our leg is doing, where the pain is. Because we are conscious of our body to some extent. We are not fully conscious. So we are all Krishna's parts and parcels, so he's conscious of all of us. He knows exactly what's going to happen, and without his sanction, say for example, Prabhupada gives this analogy, like even like so much money somebody puts for some medical cure, treatment, he gives, especially in this regard. But if unless it's sanctioned by Krishna, he will not get through it positively. So much money we may invest and effort we may put, okay, I'll get rid of this cancer and so many things. But unless it's sanctioned by the Lord that he's going to get over this, if that is there in his destiny, it's going to happen. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. It's not that just because I put the effort, I'm not going to get it. Because we are not the only doer, right? We know five other doers are there. But because of our free will, we somehow have the illusion that we are the doer. Because I am making the choice. But in every choice we make, there are other factors involved. That determines the destiny or the outcome we are going to get. Okay. Can stop here. Yeah. So as we grow in our devotion, we'll understand slowly. Hare Krishna.